Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs talks football with you.
And he's talking football with us, Gabe Ramirez, Ruthie Polinsky from Chicago Sports Network, hanging in, filling out for Mully and Haw today. And, of course, Brad joins us. All guests, actually, are brought to you by Arturo, your all-weather tire, ArturoTire.com. And this segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, Estwing.com. Make sure you go ahead and check them out. Brad, good to talk to you again. And, you know, looking ahead to next season, the Bears are facing critical decisions with, like, several key players and some gaps to fill, including the head coaching position. But considering the development of Caleb Williams, like, how different is this team going to look next year when we're talking about the actual roster?
Morning, gang. They've got work to do, right? And they've got a new coaching staff, and how different it or they will have a new coaching staff. How different it's going to look will depend in part on how a new coaching staff views some of the players that are in place and how they potentially fit the scheme and the vision and in terms of the traits that those coaches place as a premium on players at specific positions. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, but you know, they don't have a ton of players headed toward unrestricted free agency. They do have some exclusive rights guys, some restricted free agents that decisions will need to be made on, but they've got cap space. So, yeah, you're going to see a different looking team, but I don't know that 2 years from now we'll be at a point where you'll look at it and you'll say, geez, remember the final days of the Thomas Brown era? They've got 11 players left or something like that, where you see sort of the radical roster turnover.
Brad, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Thomas's press conference yesterday. Obviously, the decision to play all the starters, including Caleb Williams, and what that means, you know, for week 18. What's kind of your takeaway? That, to me, it felt pretty on brand for what Thomas Brown has stood for, and also just for what this season has now become about.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by any of that with him announcing that Caleb will play, that all the health, if you're healthy and you're a frontline guy, you're out there. And that, I mean, it's a regular season game. It's not a preseason game. There's a segment of folks out there who consistently have a fatalistic view of the Bears quarterback situation and what could happen. And part of that is because of how the Bears have handled the position over the decades. I get it. But, the guy's got to go out there and play. I'm sure he wants to go out there and play, mm-hmm. You know, like seriously, the ability to start 17 games as a rookie in the league is a big deal. And if he can stay healthy next year and the year after that, like Josh Allen's going out there to start for Buffalo this weekend, and they're going to pull him real soon. I think Sean McDermott said that, to extend a streak of consecutive starts, because stuff like that matters to guys, and being available for your teammates matters to guys. So I wasn't surprised, and I think it's the right call for him to play.
Yeah, definitely want to see Caleb Williams, you know, getting some more reps. Want to see those guys out there. When you're looking at Caleb, I mean, going into this game, you've seen his demeanor kind of change in real time throughout the season. What do you think his approach is going to be to this last game?
Hopefully he cuts it loose, right? Hopefully challenges tight windows, says to heck with it. You know, it's not a deal where the Bears can knock Green Bay out of the playoffs. The Packers are locked in. But the Packers could wind up as the seventh seed, and that would give them, I believe, a pretty gnarly first round wild card game. So, you know, go out and try to have some fun. Like I said, challenge some tight window throws. That's something he hasn't done a ton of. And hopefully they, you know, play loose. The Bears have got nothing to lose, right? Just go out there and let it all hang out.
Brad, I don't know about you watching the NFC North games this weekend without the Bears to worry about. Vikings, Packers, that game was crazy. And then the Lions last night, even with their banged up defense. Who in their right mind would voluntarily sign up to come coach in this division right now?
Yeah, that's it. You know what? It's a factor, I think, for potential candidates that they want to hire. But the Chargers are able to get Jim Harbaugh. The Raiders are able to get a new coach every year or every other year. And when you're headed to the AFC West, you got to tangle with Patrick Mahomes, right? Who's the probably the best player in football, and going against arguably the best coach in football in Andy Reid. So that's a factor. I don't think we're going to see the division be as strong next year. Like, these things tend to cycle a little bit more quickly than you would think. But if you go back in the day, like the 80s and the 90s, the NFC East was a bloodbath there every year. And that's one thing that I don't think a lot of people know about the Packers and the Lions, especially the Packers, is they've both got really young rosters. So that, I think it's a factor, Ruthie. I don't think it's going to be a deciding factor for potential candidates that they have, because we'll have to see what jobs are available. Like the Jets job, that just doesn't seem like a great one. The Saints, I think, are in such a position salary cap wise that it could be 2 years to get out of that mess. It's a really old roster. Let's see next week how many different jobs are actually open.
And there's going to be a lot of them, Brad. And that's why, you know, you're looking at this cycle for the Chicago Bears. Are they operating, as they approach this offseason, with the mindset that every coaching option is going to be available for them?
Yeah, I think you operate that way until someone tells you they're not interested, right? And they've had an awful lot of time to do some background work to try to, you know, get to know people around some of these candidates maybe and learn their history, talk to people that have worked with them before. I've said this earlier, I think I said it yesterday, I would think that they don't want to start out with a list of a dozen, 10, 12 guys to talk to. Like, that would just seem a little bit too big of a list to me. Like, maybe narrow it down, get down to 5, 6, 8, maybe at the most. Who knows? Maybe though, when they talked about casting a wide net, they want to do that with their interviews as well. But the time that they've had, I would imagine, would allow them to be a little more focused than you'd be if you just get to the Monday after the season and you think you know what you're going to do, but you're not sure, and then you wind up firing your coach. They've known, they've had time to really think about this for a while.
Albert Breer had some interesting nuggets that he reported yesterday. And I know you, Brad, reported a couple weeks ago, I want to say, you kind of poked the bear about a potential Ryan Poles extension. Felt like that was maybe in line with Albert's reporting yesterday. Are you hearing anything more? Can you provide any more context for that as they kind of embark on this search?
No, I haven't heard anything new on that, but if you're going to keep Ryan Poles, you're probably going to give him an extension. You're not going to have him on some short-term deal. You're going to look to have him aligned on the same timeline or very close to that of your new coach. It just makes sense. And there could be people throwing their arms up in the air right now. But if they keep him, I would expect him to have a new deal. Yeah. Like that just, that's just how it goes.
Do you think the extension happens before the head coaching hire so that that way they can put that on the table that there will be some continuity?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. That's certainly possible they talk about it with the new head coaching hires, this is going to be the guy, and you know, we're focused on our coaching search now, and we're going to get to him. That's a good question of the timing of it, but it only makes sense if you're going to keep him to have a new contract.
We're talking to Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune here on 670 The Score. Gabe Ramirez along with Ruthie Polinsky filling in for Mully and Hall today. Brad, are the Bears ready for change?
Are they ready to what?
Are they ready for change?
Oh, ready for change. I sure hope so. They're 4-12. They haven't won since they played in London. Yeah, I think they need a change, right? And, I mean, they needed a change when Eberflus was fired, and it's unfortunate that they, to this point anyway, haven't gotten that kind of spark to carry him through to a victory. And I might have said this a week or two ago, but, this is a reminder for folks the next time that the Bears are in a bad season to just be careful what you're asking for when you think that firing the head coach is the solution, because as is generally the case, and this certainly was, it's not the solution, and people may be happy to see a coach that they feel hasn't done a good job lose his job, but that's not going to make the remainder of the season a fun ride necessarily.
There was it all got out yesterday about Mike Vrabel's agreement ending with the Browns just in time for him to get a jump start on his coaching campaign. How quickly do you think the Bears talk to him?
Yeah, I would think Vrabel's got to be a guy that you want to get to and learn a little bit more about, right? And Vrabel, I think it sounds like they may have adjusted his initial mm-hmm. contract with Cleveland, maybe realizing, you know what, this would be a good chance for, because obviously the Browns are going nowhere this season anyway, and they've got a really good coach in Kevin Stefanski, I think. But sounds like they might have decided to part ways maybe a week earlier than otherwise, just to probably allow him to maybe dial down a little bit on what he's looking at and maybe allow him to do a little bit of research on his own. And he's a guy that should be in demand. You talk about a 6-year run with the Titans as the head coach there with a winning season in the first 4 years. Now it's just 9-7 in 2018 and 2019, but that was a solid team there for a good stretch anyway. So he's going to be a guy that will have opportunities.
Yeah, and Tina Nguyen from Fox 32, her and I, we did Chicago Sports Tonight on Sunday. She's from Vegas, did a lot of covers out there, and all we could talk about when I was asking her, she kept saying that all she kept hearing was that Tom Brady is hell bent on getting Mike Vrabel to the Raiders. So you're seeing that's why I asked you earlier. There are teams out there that are thinking to themselves, like these candidates that the Bears want or these names that are being tossed around. There are teams out there that want these guys with the same amount of fervor, same amount of anticipation. They want these guys in the building. It's going to be tough.
I mean, that Raiders job's awful. That's a bad roster. That's just like I don't know that there's enough cologne that Tom Brady can spray there in the next couple weeks to make that look really attractive. Now, can Tom Brady have an influence over that organization in a period of 2 or 3 years that perhaps puts it moving in the right direction? I don't know. I got no idea how hands-on Tom will be and how much juice he'll actually have as a minority owner of that team. But that's a bad spot. Like, unless Vrabel really likes the idea of living in Henderson, Nevada, I think they're going to be hard pressed to get him if he has other choices, right? Mm-hmm. And some of these, like the Jets, is going to be a bad job. Jacksonville could be interesting because, especially if it's a deal where if they fire everyone there, and you really like the GM, well, ownership is generally hands off there. It's in the AFC South, where they're not playing the best brand of football overall. And if you like Trevor Lawrence, some people have mixed opinions on him, but if you're someone who's like, yeah, like I think that guy's got talent and can get better, that could be a good job. As I said, the Saints thing looks messy. Who knows what's going to happen in Dallas? I think Dallas, people kind of poo-poo Dallas as a potentially good spot because of Jerry Jones and all this. But if you talk about being the head coach of the Chicago Bears as like a destination job because of the history of the organization, and I don't disagree with that, but if you throw that out there as a factor, that's got to be a factor to be the head mm-hmm. coach of the Dallas Cowboys too, right? I mean, they haven't been around as long, but it's you know what I'm saying. Like that's one of the marquee franchises in the league. So we'll see what happens with Mike McCarthy, and then there's a couple other jobs. Do the Giants open up? How do you feel about that? There's not a quarterback. I think you've got some issues there. So it's going to be an interesting, 7 to 8 days till the dust is settled after, because sometimes it's a couple days after Black Monday when the final job opens up and a team makes a decision.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one that I know you'll be following closely, Brad. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Enjoy the new year.
Thanks, Brad.
Yeah. Happy New Year, gang.
Of course, Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune. I was going to ask him, what's his favorite mailbag question of all time? I'm always reading his mailbag stuff.
The best.
So gotta go.
It's just the best.
And do that. Listen, it's a tough position to be in because there are other jobs out there. You just saw, reports, obviously coming out, and they're going to be. But Chad Forbes just tweeted out that Ben Johnson to the Jaguars is the worst kept secret in the NFL. I mean, teams are going to go hard. Jerry Jones is going to offer up a ton of money.
And Jacksonville, one thing he didn't talk about when you talk about the Jackson, that owner is going to pay.
Right.
They have no repercussions.
That's what people always ask me. They're like, why don't they? I said, listen, it is because a billionaire owner doesn't care about an extra $10 million.
Right?
But when your business is the Bears and you're crunching numbers constantly, it's a little more difficult for you to pull off something like that. And we totally understand that. But look, do you think it's going to be a long or a short process, Ruthie, finding the coach of the Chicago Bears?
I think it's going to have to be long because if Ben Johnson's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, or if Brian Flores is in the Super Bowl, unless you're like gung-ho on hiring Mike Vrabel, but then everyone's going to say, well, you didn't let Ben Johnson wait out to the Super, you just jumped the gun. It's just, you can't win. Win in this situation. I think it's going to be long.
312-644-6767. Would love to hear your thoughts on the Chicago Bears head coach, who you like. Do you want them to act swiftly and quickly, or do you want them to wait out for a guy like Ben Johnson? All right, 312-644-6767. We'll take your phone calls and we'll discuss it next. It is Gabe Ramirez along with Ruthie Polinsky from CHSN filling in for Mullion Hall right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mornings with Mullion Hall on 670 The Score.
That's the phone lines if you want to get in right now. Gabe Ramirez along with Ruthie Polinsky hanging out, filling in for Mullion Hall today. They're enjoying the new year. And we get to talk about, our resolutions for this Bears team during a day like today. But we want to go out to the phone lines. Take your phone calls. Again, 312-644-6767. 67-67. Let's go out to Jeff out in Kalamazoo. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Gabe and Ruthie. One thing about the coaching that I'm looking at is I think the Dallas is a good job for people to go at just because Jerry Jones gives you job security because he does not like to fire anybody. And you know he'll try to spend money to win even though they haven't won. But one thing I was thinking about is the Jaguars. If you go to that job, I got a feeling you're going to have to think about in 5 years, am I going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars or the London Jaguars? Because the NFL has shown they want to expand, and they are sending the Jaguars over there for a reason, I believe. And the attendance in Jacksonville isn't big on NFL football, just like Tampa Bay Rays don't like to watch baseball. I believe you might see Jacksonville going over to London here by 2030, and that's something I think a coach might have to think about. Thoughts on that? I'll listen.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jeff. I appreciate it. I mean, listen, it's a tough town. My boy lives out in Jacksonville. He's a diehard Jaguars fan, and he's always sending pictures from on Sundays where it's him by himself.
If you want to be an NFL head coach, there are 32 jobs. Like, you're not worried about 2030. You're worried about getting there and winning, and you can deal with that later. Like, I'm not worried about that when I'm thinking about being the head coach of Trevor Lawrence.
It's money. Money, too. Money's going to come into play. You know, there are teams that are going to be throwing around dollars at these guys. Ruthie, let me throw a couple of coordinators at you. Not necessarily for this specific job for the Chicago Bears, but guys that are going to be looked at, maybe that might be under the radar. First, Joe Brady's not under the radar, but an offensive coordinator for the Bills. You know, look at him, look at Brian Daboll, look at guys that are coming from that Bills organization. What do you think about coordinators that are coming from success with talented players?
Yeah, like where does Joe Brady start and Josh Allen end? This is the question we're going to ask ourselves for all these coordinators. It's hard to know what Joe Brady, and I know that the offense did change and they started to look better when Joe Brady took over play calling. I get that. To me, like, Josh Allen is the team. Like, he didn't need any development. He was ready to rock. It was just making sure that you were putting people in positions of success. Like, the situation that the Bears coordinator or coach on offense is coming into is you have to develop Caleb Williams. He does not have all the answers yet. You have to teach him how to play quarterback in the NFL because he's not having a ton of success doing it yet. You've lost 10 straight. So that, to me, is why I need to know how are you in a development standpoint as well as play calling?
Yeah, he operates at a high level when it comes to the offense as a whole, right? Despite losing Stephon Diggs, he, you know, gets Buffalo to a point where they're third in the NFL in scoring. He's there. Here's another name for you. Liam Cohen, offensive coordinator of the Buccaneers.
Love Liam. I go way back with Liam. Covered him in New England. He's a Rhode Island guy. He was he used to have camps and stuff in Rhode Island that I would cover. He was the quarterback coach at Maine, I think. And then before he went to the Rams, and Sean McVay really kind of discovered Liam, went with the Rams to the Super Bowl where the Patriots beat them. And obviously he was a candidate for the Bears offensive coordinator job this past offseason. To me, that's the one reason where I feel like it would be another admission. And I feel the same way about Cliff Kingsbury. Like, we messed up by not hiring this guy as our offensive coordinator.
Could you imagine that conversation? You're like, hey, listen, check this out, Cliff. You know, the reason why we didn't hire you is because we didn't like you as an OC. But man, we thought when you left that room, you had some head coaching chops, and we thought we were going to put you in that predicament.
No, but to answer your question about Liam Cohen real quick, he's young. I think he's very captivating. He's energetic in terms of his personality. I don't really know what he's like in front of a room. Obviously, I'm not in the room, but just knowing him and getting to know him over the years, I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, 27 points a game, excuse me, for the Buccaneers. And that's with them. Remember, they lost everybody in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. Mike Evans was hurt for a while. So they've put up some points despite, you know, losing out on some key components on that offense. All right, you can talk about Ben Johnson if you want to, but we'll do that all show long. People talk about the Eagles offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, someone that's bounced around. You didn't think he was going to get that position. Played or been with the Chargers as well. Somebody like that, when you look at that offense, you know who has less passing yards than the Bears? The Eagles.
Mm.
You know who had less?
Well, when you have Saquon Barkley.
True. You know who had less points per game in the first quarter than the Bears for a large part of the season was Eagles as well.
Mm.
What do you think about a guy like that?
I don't know much about him as a personality wise. Obviously, you're looking for the next bright minded. The Kellen Moore, Joe Brady category is similar to me, just a little underwhelming in terms of someone that's going to come here and not just call the plays, like someone that's going to come here and completely reshape the way that this team defines winning.
Right.
Like that's what you need, someone who knows how to win and knows how to teach players, like veteran players. Like this is how you behave if you want to win.
It's the ultimate Venn diagram, right, Ruthie, where you're trying to find someone who has some sort of semblance of experience while also dealing with an offense and being offensive minded. You're trying to find that perfect situation. It's difficult to come by. I mean, we're looking at the offensive coordinators of teams that are performing well offensively, the Bengals with Dan Pitcher, the Texans with Bobby Slowick. I mean, there are guys out there that are on teams that are performing well, but it's just a matter of whether or not you want to give them that first opportunity with this team specifically, right? That might have been the case a couple of years ago with Coach Eberflus when you brought him in because you knew you were rebuilding a roster. Now where it currently stands, a rebuild, the word rebuild should be as far away from Chicago as anything that you're hearing right now.
It's not a rebuild, but it's a rebuild of your mentality as an organization.
You're rebuilding your confidence?
You're rebuilding your... I don't like that either. You're rebuilding the way you view championship football. Like I remember in the preseason press conferences with Ryan Poles and I think Kevin Warren threw around the word Super Bowl. It's like This team is so far away from winning a Super Bowl that you have so much work to do in terms of just building the mentality and the culture and the state of mind and the work ethic, all of those things.
Give me the percentage of the roster that is playoff ready. Percentage of the roster. We're looking at the 53 man and we're saying, all right, this percentage of the roster is good for my playoff push that I'm trying to make. And it's because I'm trying to evaluate the team and I'm trying to get your thoughts on what that looks like.
Keenan Allen? DJ Moore has never won.
There's
like
a handful of guys that
are
good.
These guys don't know how to. Tremaine Edmonds, but like he's had a bad year. Like
bad year.
He's the only one that has been on a winning team, and TJ Edwards too, maybe.
Yeah.
Like three guys, I feel good about them. Like, but even those guys are not the huge personalities. Those are not the players that are saying, "Here's how to win. I'm going to get up in front of the room and motivate everyone, and this is how we're going to play." Like, those are not they're leaders, but they're not
they were good
tell
enough,
you how it is.
They were good enough to fool Ryan Poles into thinking that he had an exceptional roster and they
eight captains, man,
games.
And
that is tough to dig. All right, speaking of personalities, we have one in the room right now, and you get to hear from him next. Coach Dave Wannstedt joins us here on 670 The Score to give us the goods and the latest on your Chicago Bears. I am Gabe Ramirez. She is Ruthie Polinsky filling in for Mully and Haw, and we'll talk to Coach Wannstedt next right here on 670 The Score.
Dave Wannstedt, Bears head coach for six seasons.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
He has the greatest mustache you've ever seen.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause. The mustache.
Why don't you hang it out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score?
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E.
Dustin, we're not going to waste airtime on that, okay?
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank
next
you very
question.
Much.
Dave Wannstedt.
Mully and Haw. Well, no Mully or Haw. It's Gabe Ramirez, Ruthie Polinsky filling in for the guys. But we have your regularly scheduled program and guests brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. That's who's lending us to Coach Wannstedt. And, of course, the segment with Dave Wannstedt is sponsored by ChicagoRoofingContractors.org, providing all-weather protection for your business. All right, Coach, let's get right into it. When you're looking at the Bears season and how it's unfolded, in your mind, looking back, what was the biggest misstep that might not have saved the season, but might have salvaged it?
I would say, you got to turn that on, my man. Come on. Come on. You give me a headset that my grandkids, this looks like something.
Like a Walkman?
It looks like they got for Christmas.
A Sony Discman headphones?
No, I where it went wrong,
like biggest misstep. You know, you could look at something and say, "Man, if they had they done
probably,
this,
I still couldn't get over." And I would have had a difficult time even doing a press conference after the Washington game when Stevenson pulled that stunt. I think right then that was a great opportunity for Fluce just to go off and show a different side of his personality at a press conference and say, you know, this is ridiculous and this will never happen again. And I don't know, you know, in Stevenson, until he proves to this football team and me and these coaches that he can be accountable and he is all in, he's not playing. And I'd have sat him down. I'd have made a big – and I think – I mean, you know, because I remember the interviews after that and DJ Moore saying, well, you know, the leaders, we're going to have – we're going to deal with it and we're going to do this. And you know, at that point, it was like everybody, myself included, was waiting for Fluce to make a stand.
Okay,
say,
but Coach, you understand –
that had nothing to do with football.
Right.
But I think sometimes those things – really have
derail.
Just as big an impact on your team, derail Ruthie or whatever, and as losing the game.
I thought you were going to say the play before the Hail Mary,
Like taking.
I thought that's what you were going to say, and then the way that played out.
That might have been the last time he called plays for me. Okay, that would have probably been the last time he called plays, or I wouldn't have let that happen. I mean, come on. I mean, I mean, you know. But the point is that's between me and the offensive coordinator. That's how I would look at it as a head coach.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the play literally
laps.
Right. The defensive where he gave up the 13 yards to get them in Hail Mary range. But the Doug Kramer, you're talking about the Doug Kramer handoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Coach.
Well,
are you no longer calling plays for me.
So to go on that.
No, I would have said, you know, I would have called a timeout and my response would have been, tell me you're serious. Tell me I didn't hear this wrong. I'm serious now. I mean,
I know.
I don't know. Maybe it's...
I hired you. How dare you do this to me?
Right.
I think hiring, obviously, the wrong offensive coordinator
right.
was probably the root of a lot of issues.
I agree.
From the beginning.
I agree. A smart guy, good guy, but just not ready for it. Just didn't understand the big picture. Big picture.
Yeah. So, Coach, you've obviously hired your fair share of coordinators in your day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where does the mistake happen between, like, believability and what I think you can do and then what actually happens on the field? Where does that mistake happen?
Well, I only hired, and I'm serious about this now, in 17 years as a head coach, I hired a lot of assistant coaches, coordinators. And I think I hired one guy, and I won't mention his name, that I hired him on a third-party recommendation that myself or I had my inner circle of guys that didn't work with this guy. I want stuff on paper, and I want sources. I don't want resumes. I don't want resumes. I want, and I've had a lot of phone calls, you know, from the top GMs and owners and everybody around the country recommending people, but I would always go back to my guys, is this guy one of our guys? Does he understand what we got to do to win and what I want as a head coach? Tell me that. And, you know, I go back to the example when we left the University of Miami and we went to the Dallas Cowboys. You know, Jimmy called me up and, you know, I was going with them, obviously, to run the defense. And he says, what do you think? And I says, well, Jimmy, you know, we know what we're doing. We know what we want to do. We bought like nine guys with us from Miami, you know, and
worked out pretty well.
Just went to work.
Yeah.
Just went to work. We didn't waste any time on it. There was nobody questioned whether we were going to run the ball or when we were going to, you know. So I think having your people that understand what the head coach wants is really the key. And it's not recommendations from agents and it's not recommendations from a head coach that you're so impressed with, somebody calling you and, you know, that a Bill Belichick recommending a guy, you know, even though he might be a good guy, I want my inner circle guys. That's the only recommendations I'm taking.
Coach.
When I hired Chan Gailey, you know, when I got the Dolphins job, I'll go back to the Bears job. Ron Turner and I worked together at USC. Norv, his older brother, and I were the Norv was the coordinator to USC when I was there. So we used to ride to work together. And then Ronnie comes on the staff when Norv leaves, and Ron and I became friends. And I knew him. I knew his flavor. I knew what he believed in. You know, there was no question. I hired him over the phone. You know, just called him when I got the job. I said, do you want to come with me? And he says, I'd love
you're
to.
In.
I said, you're in. And, you know, when I hired Chan Gailey, I knew Chan because we worked against the Steelers when I was at the Bears. We went to Ireland. So we spent like a week with them over there practicing against them. So I'm on the field, and that was the biggest thing for me. I loved working against these teams, and our players would get work and all this, but I was evaluating the other coaches.
Mm. Oh, cool.
So I'm standing there, and I'm evaluating the Steelers staff, and Cowher and I are buddies to this day and friends, and I'm watching the guy that's working with the quarterbacks, and call him, and it's Chan Gailey. I'm watching him, and he goes to Dallas, and it didn't work out with Troy, you know, and so he's and he got released at the Cowboys, and I called him right away. The timing was perfect, and I brought him in for an interview and hired him.
I was in Miami when Chan was there for that year.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. We never connected that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, Coach, I feel like Gabe and I are victims of this too, but we're talking about this season like it's over. Like, they got a game to play.
Right.
Sunday. What's your message as the head coach this week to these guys in this locker room to go out there in Lambeau? It's going to be cold. It's going to be loud. You've got nothing to play for except your pride. Like, what is your message to the locker room?
You are playing, guys, let me tell you something. You know, whether you understand the rivalry with the Bears is not, that's not the issue where we're at right now. The most important thing that I can tell you as a head coach is that this game, you are being evaluated by 32 teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You are putting your craft, your trade on tape, whether it's for the Bears next year, to get a new contract, to stay with the Bears, to go to another team. This game is important because it's going to be evaluated. People are going to see how you respond. And that's all you can do at this point as a head coach.
Yeah, and it goes for the coaching staff as well, right? Yeah. They understand that same thing. They got to put that.
Absolutely. The toughest thing is for the families, Gabe. You know what I mean? The wives at home and, you know, the kids at school and all that stuff.
Because they're getting made fun of?
Well, not being fun of,
wow.
but you know, your that's wife happening. Knows that you're going to, you know, and that can be good and bad.
They they're picking up and moving their families soon, probably.
Yeah.
Like, that's brutal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's a mess. It's a mess. It's a life we've chosen, you know? I mean, that happens when you move. When my kids were, when I took the Bears job, one was like 10 or, one was in junior high and one was in high school. I can't remember the grades. And the oldest one, man, she had boyfriends in Dallas, and she was, you know, and I'm buying cars, I'm buying plane tickets for anybody. How many people want to, anything I can. And I told my wife, I can't hear her cry. You know, I just can't have her be upset.
You know, I think that gets kind of downplayed. People are like, well, these coaches are compensated. Like, they're paid to get fired. You know,
still
like they're
sucks.
Like, the lowest level quality control coach is not making a lot of money, and he doesn't know where he's going to be next year. Yeah. Like, that kind of gets over, you know.
Right. His family might not even be in Chicago for that matter.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's probably not. You're probably not. So, anyway. You deal with that, and, that's part of the profession.
It sucks to be in that situation for those coaches, for everyone, but they still have to come out and play. But they're going up against a Packers team who seems pretty solid in their positioning. I mean, obviously the Commanders are right there above them. They both play at 12 o'clock. It's not going to be a scoreboard watching situation, but you know, you want the Bears to still end on a high note. And I think these guys still feel like they can get a victory.
Yeah. I do. And the last one came down to the last kick, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're watching that tape also. I would say on that two things. One, and a question for you, can Green Bay, other than winning, just getting another W, can they help themselves with any of the standings in the playoffs by winning or not?
They're tied with the Commanders, though, for the last spot. So they can change their seating where they play the Rams as opposed to the Eagles. So if they end up 7, they play the Eagles. If they end up Okay. Six, they play the Rams, so I'm sure they want to win so that way they can get out of the Eagles' warpath.
But that's their only – I mean, over that, they would probably try to be healthy. I'm going to bet that Green Bay, in the back of their mind, they know they have to have Josh Jacobs healthy. I'm just talking out loud. You know you got to have Jordan Love healthy. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know. I mean, are they all in the whole game? Does that mean – as much to him, and I'm asking this. I don't have an opinion.
You're the coach. You got to have the opinion.
Yeah, you got to be healthy. If you want to have a chance to beat, I don't care who you're
playing. So first half or spreading out the carries throughout the game? Kind of like rotating guys and not Jordan Love, but Josh Jacobs for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, if you play him once, maybe you play him a half and see how it goes. I don't know. I mean, you're going to be playing next week. I might not play anybody. Okay. I mean, I might not.
You might. Coach is going to throw the ball 40 times.
I'm just telling you, the biggest pressure in this game is it's Green Bay and the Bears. If Green Bay is playing anybody else, I'm not sure. And maybe they won't. Maybe it's coaches and players, they shouldn't put that in front of the history and the tradition of the Bears rivalry. I don't know. All I'm saying is, what gives you the best chance to play next week? You're not going to get a week off, right?
Right.
You're going to be playing. You better be healthy, and you better be. And I don't know what the injury situation is. And half those guys are playing with little injuries right now. You know, with that nothing gets talked about. But guy's got a little bit of a sore ankle. His shoulders bother him a little bit. An extra week would do wonders. I promise you.
They're going to need.
Best case, they go up 40-0 in the first half and
Bears.
Pull everyone in the second
Bears. You mean the Bears. Really. Yeah. All right. Yeah. On the other side, we are going to talk about what position group coach feels like is most overrated on this Chicago Bears team. It's Gabe Ramirez along with Ruthie Polinsky filling in for Mully and Haw. We got Coach Wonstadt in studio talking more Bears on the other side right here on 670 The Score.
Beat the Packers.